week on Drugademic.
Avery Milliner back at it again with
Andrew Burns.
And in this week's episode, the drug epidemic affecting Americans today. But before we can talk about the epidemic in today's world, we got to get down to the grassroots of how it all started. The first wave of the opioid epidemic began back in 1991 when death involving opioids began to rise following a sharp increase of the prescription of opioid drugs. This was all influenced by the reassurance given to the prescribers by the pharmaceutical companies and the medical societies claiming that the risk of addiction to prescription opioids was very low. During this time, though, the pharmaceutical companies also began to promote the use of opioids in patients with non-cancer-related pain. Even though there was a lack of data regarding the risks and the benefits in these patients, by 1999, 86% of patients using opioids were using them for non-cancer pain. Communities where opioids were readily available and prescribed liberally were the first places to experience the increased opioid abuse. The second wave of this opioid epidemic started around 2010 with the rapid increase in deaths from heroin abuse. As early efforts to decrease opioid prescribing began to take effect, making prescription opioids harder to obtain, the focus turned to heroin, a cheap, widely available, and potent illegal opioid.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
The use of heroin increased in both sexes, the majority of age brackets, and all socioeconomic groups. Deaths due to heroin-related overdose increased by 286% from 2002 to 2013, and approximately 80% of heroin users admitted to misusing prescription opioids before turning to heroin. Heroin is commonly injected, which puts users at risk for injection-related disease, such like HIV, AIDS, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, skin infections, bloodstream infections, and infections of the heart. The third wave of this epidemic began in 2013 as an increase in deaths related to synthetic opioids like fentanyl. The sharpest rise in drug-related deaths occurred in 2016 with over 20,000 deaths from fentanyl and related drugs. The increase of fentanyl deaths have been linked to illicitly manufactured fentanyl, not diverted from the medical fentanyl, used to replace or adulterate other drugs of abuse. So, how is this drug epidemic affecting the economy that we live in? So, there's been a lot of economic struggles, and there's been quite a few links from reliable sources, I guess you would say, that directly relate the drug epidemic with our failing economy. Like, many people have turned to drugs because, as one would say, an economic despair. They think there's no way out of whatever debt or money troubles that they're in, and so they turn to drugs as like a numbing pain. And it's affecting a lot of families around the U.S. itself. I know family members who've had drug problems and things weren't going their way, and they just turned to that, and really didn't work out for them. According to economists Ann Case and Argus Deaton of Princeton University, a lot of the economic struggles attribute to the sharp increase in drug overdoses between 1999 and 2015, and up to this day itself. As they say, again, as they use it to deaths of despair rather than to the increased ease of obtaining opioids. Like, they, just because an opioid is easy to get doesn't mean that that's the reason that people are doing them. A lot of it, again, is all related to the economic struggles that we have going on.
Alright, my name is Andrew Burns, and I'm talking to my teacher, Mr. Hartman, Mark Hartman, and today I'm going to be asking him some questions. Alright, do you think the current economy problems have any relation to the drug epidemic?
Yes, I do, specifically the opioid epidemic, and we're starting to see research that confirms this. that, because the opioids have been around for a long time, and we saw a huge spike in abuse of those drugs and other drugs like fentanyl and heroin as a result of the economic collapse in 2008, 2009. That economic collapse really negatively impacted a lot of people, wiped out whatever savings they did manage to have. And one thing that we know is that when people lose hope and become desperate, they will do anything to not feel that kind of economic anxiety. And so the opioid crisis really spiked after the economic collapse as a sort of a coping mechanism for people to try to escape their horrible economic reality.
Increased usage in the youth. Drug use among the youth has increased within the years, and it could keep getting worse if no one does something about it to fix it. Adolescent drug use is particularly damaging, as such use can affect the physical and mental development of young people, can also impact their opportunities later in life, and who wants that? The brain and body are still developing, and you can usually stop growing by the mid-20s or even the early 30s, which is surprising. Doing any drug that you're not supposed to do or something that you're abusing, such as pharmaceutical medication, can lead to permanent damage. Lots of kids go into doing drugs thinking it's cool or whatever, or they're just using it to self-medicate and they have little to no knowledge of what it can do to you. And it's getting to a point where it's getting hard to control their actions. As of 2018, marijuana was still one of the most used drugs among adolescents, with around 80% of 12th graders perceiving marijuana as fairly easy to obtain compared to the other 28% of those perceiving the same for cocaine. One reason why the marijuana usage rose up within the youth is because it's now medical in lots of states, and it makes it easier for the youth to get. Since marijuana has now been legalized, the black market has expanded. Usually younger kids get their marijuana from someone other than the dispensary, because you could get more for a cheaper price, and it's easier to find that way, since you have to be 21, of course. Alcohol is another drug that has increased within the youth. A lot of kids usually get into their parents' or guardian's stash and take a little bit of each, so it's not noticeable. Same with any other drugs, such as weed, any pain pills, etc. And this is a quote I'm going to be quoting. It says, when compared with use by adults, alcohol use by adolescents is much more likely to be epidemic, which is binge, and heavy, which makes alcohol use by those in this age group particularly dangerous. Rapid binge drinking, possibly related to a bet or dare, puts the teenager at even a higher risk of alcohol overdose or alcohol poisoning, in which suppression of the gag reflex and respiratory drive can be fatal. The adult definition of binge drinking is the consumption of 5 or more drinks in a row over approximately a 2-hour period. Is often also used to describe adolescent or young adult alcohol use. Alcohol use is the primary contributor to the leading causes of adolescent death, such as motor vehicle crashes, homicide, and suicide in the United States. 19 motor vehicle crashes rank as a top cause of death for U.S. teenagers and young adults.
All right. Have you ever seen any increase in the usage of drugs in the youth?
Not really. Not with respect to the opioids in particular. Certainly, the drugs of choice, are still very popular. Some other different types of drug use, certainly, certainly vaping, but not with respect to like opioid abuse.
All right, my name is Andrew, which you guys already know. You know, interviewing Avery Thomas Milner, and I'm gonna be asking him some questions. All right, so Avery. So, what do you think about the teen usage of drugs?
Well, been on quite the rise in recent years. I've seen more people school-wide, other schools, begin to get more involved in all sorts of other drugs. Wasn't a whole lot, like, as bad a few years ago. There's not a whole lot of people who did hardly anything. But in recent years, I've definitely seen a bigger increase in the drug use between teens today. A lot more getting more experimental with other drugs besides weed.
All right. How the government is fixing it. The United States has focused its efforts on the criminalization of drug use. The government has, to no avail, spent countless billions of dollars in efforts to eradicate the supply of drugs. Efforts of interdiction and law enforcement have not been met with decreases in the availability of drugs in America. Apart from being highly costly, drug law enforcement has been counterproductive. Current drug laws need to be relaxed. The United States needs to shift spending from law enforcement and penalization to education, treatment, and prevention. And I'm going to first start off with the topic nicotine. Oregon's new law has raised the age to purchase tobacco to 21 years old, which is an evidence-based strategy that will help reduce youth initiation of tobacco. Most addiction to tobacco starts in adolescence, so protecting kids is critical. 9 out of 10 adults who smoke report that they started smoking before they turned 18, and almost 100% start before they turn 26. Other states such as California, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Hawaii, and Maine have also raised the age to 21. There are some cities like New York City, Chicago, San Antonio, Boston, Cleveland, Minneapolis, both Kansas cities, and Washington, D.C., who also made the change. I believe that it is a good idea that all these places are making the change because it will encourage the rest of the states and cities to do the same. The second topic I'll be talking about will be opioids. In an effort to reduce risks and maximize the benefits of an available pain treatment options, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is CDC, issue comprehensive guidelines for prescribing opioids for chronic pain outside of cancer treatment. Palliative care and end-of-life care, these prescribing recommendations say that non-opioid treatments are the preferred first step for treatment of chronic pain. Opioid medications should only be added after careful assessment of pain control and followed by regular evaluations of their continued need. Attempts to change opioid prescribing patterns have been opposed primarily by indirect intervention by the pharmaceutical industry through lobbying and advocacy groups. These efforts include attempts to halt measures to restrict opioid overprescribing, efforts to undermine the CDC guidelines, and thwarting attempts to hold prescribers and pharmaceutical companies accountable. Researchers from two universities found that the opposite to the CDC guidelines was significantly more common among organizations that received funding from opioid manufacturers. An investigation by the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs detailed the financial ties that exist between opioid manufacturers, advocacy groups, and medical professional societies. The report exposed patient advocacy group and professional society spending millions of dollars to promote messages and policies favoring the interests of the pharmaceutical industry.
All right, do you think the government is doing anything to fix this?
Well, I think that the government right now is still struggling to define the problem, to define the extent of the problem, and the government is struggling trying to see the connection and the correlation between the opioid crisis specifically and our economic condition. So I don't think that they're doing enough, because I don't think they've recognized the true cause of the problem and the connections between the opioid epidemic and our economic condition.
How do you think this epidemic could be fixed?
I don't think we can fix the opioid epidemic unless we fix the underlying economic condition. And in fact, I think we're just going to see it worse. get worse. And you're already seeing that now as it becomes harder and harder, for example, to access opioids like OxyContin. What we're doing is gravitating to things like heroin. And so in that respect, it's just actually just becoming worse. You can't solve a problem unless you recognize the cause of the problem. You can't solve a problem unless you correctly diagnose the cause of the problem.
All right, well, I think that'll be it for now. We'll ask, ask more questions later on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Effects of drugs on you, recreational use. Recreational use of drugs have increased throughout the years. The top 8 popular recreational drugs in America would be alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, hydrocodone, Adderall, cocaine, oxycodone, and Xanax. Xanax has been pretty popular this past few years among teens and young adults because of rappers and people want to be like them, or people just want to do it just for the fun of it. Other reasons are is because Xanax is really addictive and some may feel like they can do anything. Marijuana recreational use also has increased, like I said before, the legalization throughout the United States. It got people to try medicine that may help with some health issues. The increase of marijuana usage after the legalization shows that marijuana is a healthy alternative from prescription pills. When you smoke or eat marijuana, chemicals called cannabinoids are released into your body. One main cannabinoid is THC. Cannabinoids move from your lungs or stomach into your blood. From there, they travel to your brain and the rest of your body. THC acts on certain receptors in your brain. This creates the high some people may feel. The latest report of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, published on May 20th, by 2013, 348 new psychoactive substances have been reported to the agency, almost all of them since 2008. They include 110 synthetic cannabinoids, which are supposed to mimic the effects of smoking marijuana, and many more little understood stimulants. Between 2010 and 2012, seizures of order synthetic amphetamine-style drugs, mostly methamphetamine or crystal meth, doubled largely because of demand in Africa, Asia, and South America.
I'm here with my friend Cody. He's done both recreational and medical use, and I wanted to ask him a few questions. So, Cody, what are your thoughts on medical use versus recreational use?
Well, medical use is badass. I personally use it because I have depression and anxiety. Like, sometimes I have anxiety so bad, like, I'll have panic attacks. But once, like, I just smoke a little ganja, it just kind of goes away. But I do think that it does have its downsides sometimes. But other than that, it's pretty good. When using recreational use, it's much easier to get. It's cheaper. But the downsides are that I'll never know what's in it or being sprayed on it or what it's being cut with, whether it be pharmaceutical or marijuana. It could also be cut with anything else, and I would never know. So it's actually a lot safer to go with medical. And if you don't have medical, if you're old enough, I'd say, you know, go out and get yourself a card. It's not that hard. It's kind of easy, but yeah.
So this other question I'm going to ask you, Avery. So the question you asked Cody about what he thought about recreational use versus medical use. I want to know your thoughts about that, not just his years.
Well, for those who do medical use, they have many big advantages going for them. A lot of their drugs aren't going to be cut with anything that could be potentially life-threatening. A lot of them are just clean and used to get tax revenues for the government itself. But for recreational users, it's quite easy to get any kind of drug. But the downside to all of that is they'll never know what's in their drugs.
Damage of drugs on your brain and body. Drugs work by changing the brain's chemistry and by affecting the neurons' signaling in many ways. The job of the neurons are to control cognition, muscle movement, sensory information, and emotions. They communicate with each other using synapses. As the neurons connect to the synapses, they release special chemicals called neurotransmitters. All of these things work together as part of a normally functioning brain. Some drugs are similar to in structure to neurotransmitter and are able to bind to neurotransmitter receptors on neurons. Drugs like cocaine and amphetamine stimulate neurons to release abnormally high amounts of these neurotransmitters. Others cause the release of high amounts of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter. This is what responsible for all the euphoric highs that drug users talk about. All addicted drugs act in the brain to reduce their euphoric effects. However, some can also cause damage due to seizures, stroke, and direct toxic effects on brain cells. Drug use can also lead to addiction, a brain disorder that occurs when repeated drug use leads to changes in the function of multiple brain circuits that control pleasures, reward, stress, decision-making, impulsive control, learning and memory, and other functions. These changes make it harder for those with an addiction to experience pleasure in response to natural rewards such as food, sex, positive social interactions, or to manage their stress, control their impulses, and make the healthy choice to stop drug seeking and use. Any drug that can affect your body, brain, if you do too much of it. STD/HIV are diseases that have been increasing throughout the years. They are associated with HIV risk behaviors such as needle sharing when infected and risky sexual behaviors, and have been linked to outbreaks of HIV and viral hepatitis. People who are addicted to opioids are also at risk of turning to other ways to get the drug, including trading sex for drugs or money, which increases the HIV risk. Also, some drugs like Xanax can affect how you act. There are some research that has shown people who are users of Xanax may have a likelihood of developing cognitive problems and impairment. There have also been a few studies showing that Xanax is bad for your brain in the long term because it can raise your likelihood of developing dementia or Alzheimer's, although a lot more research still needs to be done on it. Another drug that can affect your body would be alcohol. Alcohol can really affect your liver by consuming it frequently, and a lot of people get it from anyone, anywhere. Can the damage be reversed? There are certain areas and degrees of brain damage that cannot be repaired. For example, methamphetamine causes permanent damage to the cells of the self-controlled tract with the very first use. This damage is equivalent to months or even years of alcohol abuse. It's also the reason why many meth addicts claim they become hooked after using it only one time. While this cell damage is most likely permanent, biochemical changes in the brain can reverse after 6 to 12 months of abstinence. This means a relief from anxiety, depression, nightmares, and hallucinations that recovery meth addicts typically experience. So, how can one keep these things from happening to him? The answer may be too simple. Stay away from drugs. Never use them in the first place. This may be easier said than done for some, but the truth is there are no excuses. Most teens are aware of which of their fellow peers are using drugs or alcohol. The easiest way to stay away from drugs and the pressure to use them is to keep out of situations in which drugs may be present. This includes certain parties or gatherings, usually. As for parents, try to keep children involved in activities that promote production and encourage ethical behavior. Set rules and standards for the household and follow them to be a good example.
Body and brain. There's been some studies that show ADHD drugs can deliver some short-term relief for symptoms of ADHD. In some children, hyperactivity and inattention may improve. These dangers can provide short-term improvements to kids' behavior, including in the classroom. It allows them to focus better on the work that they're doing so they're not all over the place bouncing off the walls and shit, you know? And then we move on to, like, marijuana and stuff. So, marijuana has helped many, many people with chronic pain, alcoholism, depression, PTSD, anxiety. Like, my buddy Cody, he's been having a rough time with his anxiety, and weed has come in very clutch for him. A lot of people use weed for cancer that they have. helps them out a lot, relieves a lot of the pain, just makes their life a little bit more bearable. But to cut it back to the history, one of the first drugs that was ever created, or at least one of the notable drugs that was created, was anesthesia. It helped for thousands of years, and to this present day, it's still in use today. It's got many medical advantages. It allows patients who are going into surgery or having just lots of pain, and give them some anesthesia, and they're all chilling. It's all good. They're not feeling in much pain anymore. It's one of the most useful drugs we have out there. More prevalent drugs in use today are the opioids, which, I mean, when abused, they can cause some big problems. But when they're used medically and how they should, it helps people in a lot of pain just get out of the pain. Helps them get stronger. So with the use of like man-made drugs and natural drugs, you might be asking yourself, man, which one should I pick? Like I said before, man-made drugs, they got lots of benefits to them. You know, as long as you don't abuse them or take them how they're not supposed to be. But they also got their downsides to them. Many of them often to be very, very addictive. And about 8% of hospital admissions in the United States of America are due to adverse or side effects of synthetic drugs like heroin and fentanyl and cocaine, all that stuff. Approximately 100,000 people each year die due to these, like, toxicities and overdoses and stuff. And that's, like, it's not slowing down in recent years. Just keep going. It's growing with all the economic failings and people losing houses and debts and stuff. But I mean, with those stats, it means that the people killed by pharmaceutical drugs are at least 3 times more likely to be killed than people by drunken drivers. And each year thousands of people die from supposedly safe over-the-counter drugs. And it's just like, we need to buckle down as a society and figure out how we can fix these problems going on in America today. Even the National Poison Control Center of the United States does not have a category in their database for the site of adverse reactions to herbs. Like, they don't, there isn't even enough deaths to even be calculated from natural drugs and stuff like that. A lot of people use natural drugs to help them with their daily lives. Like, people might be short on vitamins, and they use that kind of stuff to help get them what they need. There's a lot of clinical trials underway that could lead to the Food and Drug Administration approval of, like, natural drugs like psilocybin. A lot of these active ingredients in all these drugs, like mushrooms, ketamine, are help for depression and stuff. Like, they've been doing lots of tests on that and how they can affect PTSD and just a lot of things to help people with their daily lives. MDMA, which is the active ingredient in ecstasy, has helped a lot of people in with PTSD get over it. Not like get over it like you need to get over it, but like help them get through it and make it not so much of a prevalent thing in their daily life. Just like to thank you for tuning into our podcast. Hope you have a great day, night, or whenever you're listening, and I'll catch you again soon.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.